welcome back to a very special episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast. It's myself, Momency. This show is brought to you by NBA 2K24, as always. And alongside me, as always, three-time NBA champion PJ Armstrong. But we had to draft in a family member here on the show because the team that he helped build, the team that he's the architect of, just advanced in the playoffs. Former general manager of the New York Knicks, Mr. Scott Perry. Welcome back. It's been a while.
It's been a while, but it's great to be back right in the midst of this playoff basketball.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, my energy's on 10 after that. That was a tense finish over in New York, and we're going to get your thoughts and opinions on that. But first, we've got to start over with the Milwaukee Bucks being eliminated by the Indiana Pacers in six games. They lost tonight, 120-98. Damian Lillard did play. Giannis was not there, but they were simply outworked by the Indiana Pacers, especially on the defensive end. The Pacers had six players in double figures. They were pressing high up the court. They had the intensity. They're throwing bodies at Dame. Dame still managed to pull up with 28 points, but the Pacers walked away victorious. BJ, what were your thoughts on this game? I know you said you were going to boycott it, but I know you watched it anyway.
I peeked at it. No. For the Indiana Pacers' sake, I'm happy that they showed up. Okay, they got great contribution, and we always talk about contributions. I mean, they got not one guy, but they got two guys that had 20 points off their bench. They played well. This is a game, a series they should have won because of injuries. I thought they were the better team once all of the guys, Giannis in particular, didn't play, and probably took an extra game or two for them to finish this out, but they did it. So congrats to the Pacers. And now let's get to the next round. But I didn't expect much more than what happened. I mean, this was a big time win. So much to overcome. A lot of adversity there in Milwaukee. It's going to be fascinating to watch their offseason moves. Right? And I think they got a lot of things to do up there in Milwaukee.
We'll get to that, but first on the game, the Pacers started this game with more fast break points in the first quarter than they had in the entirety of game five. And obviously that was a real wake up call for them because they should have closed out the series. Scott, what did you see on the court before we dive into their future moves?
Guys, you've heard me say this many a times when I talk about the importance of having depth on your team, and the depth won it tonight. When you can score 48 bench points, being the Indiana Pacers scoring 48, and your opponent only has 10. I mean, do the math. That sets up a blowout win for that team, and your starters play anywhere near even. You're running away with the victory. It is so important, and BJ knows this, when you get into a seven-game series, of course you need your high-end or star players to play at a consistent level, but there are always a game or two where you need someone or a few people off your bench to have big nights. And that's what we saw tonight with this Pacer team, man. So proud of watching Obi Toppin out there, former draft pick. He played terrific tonight with 21.
TJ McConnell. He was the difference maker. The energy that he brought in off the bench was a difference, man. He really moved the needle for them.
It was huge. And so between the bench play, and I'll tell you what else I watched with this Milwaukee team. Now, obviously, they're down Giannis, so that was a huge detriment for them the entire series. Dame in and out. Okay, they're shorthanded. We get it. But you look at that team, they looked a little slow to me, looked a little older. They looked less athletic, especially without the presence of Giannis. So they didn't have, again, we talk about the depth, a player or players who could at least energize the team. They might not be able to make up for the skill and the impact of Giannis, but again, a couple of players who are athletic enough to keep up with Obi and that bench brigade did not see that from Milwaukee. So they didn't have a chance. When you come home like that and you're a young team, Indiana, they knew they had to close it out. They didn't want to go back on the road and take a chance going back into Milwaukee. So congrats to them. Well-deserved. And now they're on to the next round against those New York Knicks.
So here's my thing with the Bucks, right? Giannis, just 3 years ago, age 26, we're having the conversations. Is he going to get into the top 10 of all time? Could he get to top five all time? He's already got a couple MVPs, defensive player of the year. Then he won a championship, a finals MVP with one of the best closeout performances we've seen. But fast forward to now, he's turning 30 in December of this year. This year, he missed the entirety of the playoffs. Last year, he missed the two games with his back problems, and they lost in the first round to the Miami Heat. The year before, Chris Middleton missed, 10 games with his MCL. They lost in the playoffs. So ever since they won that championship, the Bucks have never really had a healthy playoff run. And now with their roster, Brook Lopez, Bobby Portis, Chris Middleton, Damian Lillard, these are all older players now. Yeah, Giannis obviously signed the extension, but if they can't get it together in next year's playoffs, do you think that he's going to assess his options and think, I've turned 30 years old now, I want to win more in my career? There's the kid in San Antonio who's going to come and compete every year. There's all these other young talents around the league. I need to relocate to a different team.
Well, first of all, I don't know Giannis personally to know how he's wired. If he wants to be one of those guys, regardless of what's going on in Milwaukee, does he want to stay there his entire career? Because that means something to a handful of players, you know, to be able to be drafted at a place, build it up, become a champion there, and play your entire career there. So I don't know how much that matters to him. But for the sake of the conversation and where the game is at today, we know a lot of players are open to moving and changing teams. What I would say, if he wants to move, I would try my best to stay in the Eastern Conference and not jump over there in the Western Conference. You just mentioned Victor Wembanyama, and they're top heavy with really good young teams in OKC, Minnesota, Dallas. So you're going to really go through a gauntlet there trying to get out of there to get to the finals. So be interesting to watch and to see. But right now, my guess is Giannis has got to be focused on how do we get this team better. I just think, and I mentioned it earlier, they've got to find some kind of way either to develop one of those younger guys on their roster that they didn't play that much this year, or go out and acquire one via trade or free agency this summer to help energize that group, to help them get through the regular season and allow that playoff experience to, the older guys come playoff time, be ready to help them win a number of playoff series.
Well, here's the thing. They're one of the highest paying in terms of payroll teams in the NBA. Trading away some of their guys, there's not a lot of guys you look at on the roster that you're going to receive in return value a top level talent, and that's going to make all the difference. And if you do trade, for example, Chris Middleton, then you're giving up your third option. What are you going to get back that's better than Chris Middleton? They don't really have the leverage in these trade talks. BJ, do you see there's any way that they can improve this roster aside from developing one of the younger players who didn't get a lot of run?
Well, I think the main focus for this team at this stage is they've got to find a way to get young legs, new energy into the building, but still maintain their core players, right? And their three core players would be Middleton, Giannis, and Damian Lillard. And they're going to have to figure out how to infuse, you know, their athleticism, like Scott mentioned earlier. But more importantly, they're going to have to get contributions for guys that's going to allow them to play a different brand of basketball. Without question, you have to have players that can play downhill. You're going to have people that can guard the perimeter players. And they're going to have to figure out how to address their primary problem, which has been a problem for them since day one, which is how to guard perimeter guards, in particular at the lead guard position. So there are a lot of things to address. You know, you can point to all of the adversity. It's well documented. They've changed coaches. They've done a lot of things. And it's not to make any excuses for them, but it's very difficult what Doc Rivers did this year coming in. So they have a lot of things to address as far as their personnel, what they're going to do, how they're going to do it. But more importantly, without question, if there's anything I think they're going to have to huddle up on as an organization is to figure out how to get younger players and play with a little bit more speed and quickness that's required to play in today's game, especially during the regular season.
I know Adrian Griffin must be somewhere smiling. He's got a guaranteed, $4 million a year up until 2027 being paid out by the Milwaukee Bucks. And, you know, the team had a significantly better record when he was the coach than with Doc Rivers. And obviously it's tough coming in midseason as a coach. It's going to be good for them to get an offseason together, get training camp together, and have a real run at it next year. And hopefully they can all stay healthy. But fellas, speaking of young legs, you got to have some young legs to play for this Knicks team, because it was another game that went down to the wire. The starters playing huge minutes. Dante DiVincenzo played 48 minutes tonight, and the New York Knicks defeat the Philadelphia 76ers in six games. Final score 118 to 115. And what a game it was. You know, after what happened in the previous matchup, you just, no lead was safe, right? There was no lead that was safe. And BJ, you and I talked about being up three and choosing to intentionally foul the opposition to send them to the line. Tom Thibodeau must have heard the podcast, because that's exactly what he did tonight down the stretch, and they closed out the game. Jalen Brunson with another 41-point game. He's been absolutely on fire this offseason. Embiid had 39 and 13 boards, but that wasn't enough. Scott, let me get your take on this Knicks team and how they performed in this first-round series.
Mo, BJ, everybody's going to be talking about Jalen Brunson coming tomorrow. Again, another 40-point effort, you know, Knicks history. And look, rightfully so. He has played terrific. They're not even in this position to win this series without his play throughout the entire year, let alone this series. But I got to give credit to a couple of unsung heroes in this game that I don't think they win this game or series without. Let me start with Josh Hart. They don't win games one and two without Josh Hart.
They don't win tonight's game without Josh Hart.
And I was getting there. They don't win one and two, and then tonight he hits the big three. All of the extra possessions that Josh Hart gets this team is unbelievable. And it's demoralizing for the defense, and in particular the Philadelphia 76ers. I thought he was the key to victory again tonight, just his effort, his hustle, and his willingness to step up, because it was obviously Philadelphia's game plan was to let him have those three-point shots. They were shading DiVincenzo. They wanted to give him open looks. They wanted to close OG Anunoby more. And obviously, you know, guard Brunson. So they wanted to leave him open. And boy, did he make them pay. The other guys on the bench, you know, DiVincenzo has a big night. And I thought OG was huge tonight, too, at both ends. I mean, he had big-time blocks, big-time finishes at the rim.
Oh, that dunk was crazy.
Yeah. And so the Knicks just showed me this. I said this early on in the series, that who's going to get to the most 50-50 balls and who's going to win that battle on the offensive glass. The Knicks won that battle again tonight. That's why they're victorious. That's why they won 4-2. Congrats to them, and on to the Pacers.
Yep. Josh Hart, 22 offensive rebounds in this series. He had six of them tonight. Isaiah Hartenstein, another player who's made a huge impact. I thought Mitchell Robinson did a great job in the minutes where he was out there guarding Embiid as well. And BJ, what are your thoughts on this win for the Knicks?
Well, as far as entertainment, this was great. This is great theater.
Best series of the first round.
It was very competitive. And it was very highly contested in almost every game. Well, every game. I mean, it was just down to the wire. This game could have went either way.
What? Yeah.
Again, we thought the Knicks had it in hand with about 50-something seconds to go. They're up six or eight. And somehow the Sixers come back and tie the game up. So this was a great series. I loved it. I thought, you know, the coaches did a terrific job. It was one thing that kind of stood out to me tonight was, here is a big game, game six for both teams. And suddenly Buddy Hield just comes out of nowhere. you know, but to his credit, guys, he was ready when his number was called.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this was, you know, you got to give Brunson credit. I mean, when you say carry the book bag, he carried this team. They got great contributions from the others, their players, and those guys stepped up in a timely fashion. You know, Josh Hart, that was just a big shot. The offensive rebounding in this series favored the Knicks, and to me, that was the key to the series. I mean, they came up with timely offensive rebounds time and time again, especially down the stretch, when we know the importance of limiting a team to just one shot when you need that defensive stop. So give the Knicks credit. Those guys played a lot of minutes. I think they only played like seven players again tonight. But I'm picking them to win the next series.
Absolutely. Yeah. BJ,
I'm picking them to win.
You know, and one thing I'll add, you brought up Buddy Hield. And if you're a Sixers fan, and you know how fans will do host series, analyze what happened. They're saying, well, why didn't this guy play the two games prior to this? Right. Now, this guy is a big time shooter, shows up in big time moments. And I wondered where he was. And it was, I was glad he showed you what he was made of.
Well, game one and two, he was zero from three.
Yeah, but how many minutes?
26 minutes across the two games.
Yeah, right. So he didn't, but again, how much was run for him? But a guy like this who has experience and who's played, and you went and got him at the trade deadline, in my opinion, I would think that you would have tried him every night just to see if you get what you got tonight from
him. He's one of those players where he just needs one shot to get him going. And you saw that tonight because they were doubling hard on Embiid. They were packing players in the paint to get Maxey to not get to the basket. And he was open and he was the beneficiary of that. And that was the whole plan when they traded for him. And it's ironic, you know, everyone was talking about all series long up until tonight. Has any player lost themselves more money in the playoffs than Buddy Hield, who's entering free agency? And then after tonight's game, it's like, has one game ever made a player so much money in the playoffs? Because he showed what he can do when he gets an extended run at it. BJ, I want to ask you this though, because you played in the NBA as a smaller guard. Now, Josh Hart, a little bit taller than you, but just how impressive is it that someone of his size is getting all of those rebounds? Because we've never seen a player at his height getting all of those boards, especially on the offensive end.
Well, it's one thing, you know, I think we like to say in scouting is you can't measure a man's what's in his mind and you can't measure what's in his heart. This man, Josh Hart, plays the game the right way. He's tough. He battles and he fights. You know, he's going to battle for every possession. So, you know, that just speaks about him. And I think when you watch him play, you tend to watch guys that, you know, well, he's long. He has a 7'2" wingspan and all these things. And I'll never forget. There was a player once when I was working for the Bulls. I don't know if you remember him, Scott. Darnell Harvey. Remember Darnell Harvey?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Played at Harvard, University of Florida.
Played at University of Florida.
Florida, exactly.
Remember? And I remember, you know, like so many teams still do to this day, you know, you measure their vertical, you measure their wingspan, you measure all of these analytics.
He couldn't shoot, third jump.
And I remember, I remember him doing this workout. He said, I'm not going to jump the highest. I'm not going to have the longest wingspan. But if it's a loose ball, I bet you I get it. And I never forgot that.
Josh Hart
has figured that out. He don't jump the highest. He's not the tallest. Mm-mm. You know, but if it's a loose ball, he's going to get it. And so that's the one thing we can't measure. He just wants it. He just wants it more. And he goes and gets it, mm-hmm. and he fights regardless of whatever the obstacle is or what's in front of him. So you got to give him credit. So you got to have to meet that intensity with the same level of intensity if you're going to play, you play against a player like a Josh Hart.
Now, the Philadelphia 76ers, obviously, we have to give credit to Joel Embiid for playing this series because he was dealing with a whole heap of injuries. He went out there. A lot of players wouldn't have played those games. So credit to him. But where do they go from here? Another disappointing playoff exit. And it feels like every year we have the same story of Embiid not being fully 100% and ready for the playoffs. And then they get eliminated. So if they truly want to trust the process and win a championship, where do they go from here, Scott?
Well, the good thing for the Sixers, they're going to have some money this summer to go out and spend and to add to that roster. So I think they got to look to free agency to do that and see if they can add to Joel. Again, I always believe in developing from within. Tyrese Maxey took another big step this year. I think what he needs to come back next year is just be that much more consistent, especially in tight game situations. You know, sometimes he can go still too fast. And so clean up some of those things and be able to change speeds a little bit more and take care of the ball in crucial situations. So his next step will be crucial for him too. And Embiid's situation is going to be what it is in terms of his body and health. You just got to keep your fingers crossed that this guy can stay healthy enough during the season, especially the latter part of the season heading into the playoffs, and figure out, you know, how you can go about doing that. And that's going to be something that he and not only the Sixers team, but I'm sure, you know, he has his training team available to him as well, that they got to figure that out. Does that mean dropping a little more weight this year? Does that mean getting add a little more flexibility? That's going to be important. But they got to add somebody in free agency that's going to be that consistent third player, you know, that can get them 16 to 18 points a night and also be able to defend, play some defense too. So, Kelly Oubre, I think, played well enough.
He was solid for them, and Buddy Hield's on the roster they want to retain.
But yeah, name, I'm sure they'll try to keep the shooting.
The name that keeps coming up for the Sixers this offseason is Paul George. BJ, how would you like that fit of Paul George on this Philadelphia roster? And do you think that's a championship caliber team with Maxey and Embiid?
Well, certainly when you look at the talent and you can add a talent like Paul George, you got to take a look. Now, you know, Paul George over the years has had his, you know, his history with injuries, so forth and so on. And coming into Philadelphia, you know, that's a tough place. So I think their success will revolve around the health of Joel Embiid. Tyrese Maxey has shown that he can carry a team in the playoffs as a one if need be, but he will defer if need be. And he plays with speed and quickness. So I think he's a great fit with Joel Embiid. But they're going to have to address, I think, you know, that wing position, in particular, Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris is, I would free consider agent, him more undersized. He's an, you know, the free agent, but he's an undersized four. Well, yes. And you're going to have to figure out how to get consistent production from that wing position. Okay. Kelly Oubre was nice. However, you're going to have to find what I would consider an elite 20 game score. Scott said, 15, 18 points?
16, 18. Need, yeah, but 20.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're going to need a 20 game score. And the reason being is because if history is any indication, we don't know what we can get out of Joel Embiid. So you're going to need this guy to be a 20 point scorer to be able to maintain and carry that when Joel can't play, maybe for a stretch. But if you can find a player like Paul George with that level of talent that doesn't have to carry your team night in and night out, and those guys are healthy, I think that would be an excellent fit, an excellent opportunity. But that's a lot of ifs. I still think they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do up front if they got a Paul George, because you're still going to have to rebound the basketball. You're still going to have to play with some level of physicality outside of Joel Embiid. And so I think there's a lot of things they have to address. And as Scott likes to always refer to, you got to add the depth. Yes, I mean, when you have absolutely. Two starters like they did tonight in a critical game six, and both guys came up with 0 points, that's a problem, right? I mean, you can't have two starters. Okay, maybe you can survive with one, but you can't have two starters in a must game like this and then expect to be a championship caliber team.
And I would add, and you're talking about the depth, and I thought they were going to do this at the deadline. I really thought they needed to add a good backup center with some size to add, you know, so because in this series, they were afraid to take Embiid off the floor, even 1 minute. They lost all the minutes by a sizable margin. So if you had a big, you know, a name that was talked about around the trade deadline was a guy like Andre Drummond, even, who could rebound, be physical in the painted area, you know, finish on the interior. They're going to need somebody like that in a backup role. And just, you know, Embiid's not going to play a full 82-game season, no matter how healthy he is. So somebody who's going to be able to play when called upon a lot of minutes, and, you know, not he won't be Joel Embiid, but he also will be able to at least keep the team playing at least at an even level instead of falling off the cliff like they did in the series when he was off the court.
Yeah, Sixers fans are big on Paul Reed, but I don't know if that's the answer there. Scott, I want to get your opinion on this. If I'm the Philadelphia 76ers GM, and I can't get Paul George because I think the Clippers will have to keep him after they maybe lose to the Mavericks, but we'll talk about that in a sec. I would go after the man who just dunked on my franchise player and eliminated us from the playoffs. I'm going after OG Anunoby, who's also a free agent this summer. He came up with 19 points, 9 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 blocks tonight. He provides you with that third option that you can have on the offense. He doesn't need a lot of the ball. He's one of the best defenders in the entire NBA. He brings the toughness and physicality required to compete in the NBA playoffs. You say you need a 20 points per game scorer. I think his career high is around 17. He had a couple seasons ago, he had 16 and a bit in Toronto. What do you think about that if you're the Philadelphia 76ers?
Well, as you know, I initially said someone who would average 16 to 18 points, he falls right into that wheelhouse, and he gives you the two-way play like you're talking about, and I had talked about. Do I think he would be an excellent fit there? Absolutely. Do I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Knicks to find a way to keep him? That, yes to that as well, too. So that'll be interesting to see where he comes in on the market, because he has performed. I mean, the Knicks with him on the court, I mean, how many games have they lost this year in the regular season?
Barely
I think
any.
They lost three. He only lost three in the regular season.
They've lost five games with him on the court.
Right.
Since before the trade deadline.
Yeah, and then, you know, they win this series, this opening series, and he's been huge. He's answered the call at both ends of the floor, goes about his business. Do I think he could really help them? Yes. He's not that 20-point-a-game score that BJ talked about consistently. But, boy, I do think he could give you that consistent 16 to 18 points. And defensively, boy, now he really helps a guy like Joel Embiid, you know, especially with him playing hobbled like he was today, because he can contain his man. And he can protect the rim a little bit as a small forward, you know, undersized forward.
And we even saw him guarding Embiid for stretches in this series, and he did a great job of that. But let's look ahead to tonight's games. Mm-hmm. The Cleveland Cavaliers have the chance to close out the series on the road in Orlando for Game 6. They've been horrible when playing in Orlando so far in this playoffs. Do they fight their demons tonight and seal the series, or will we be seeing a Game 7 between the 4 and 5 seeds in the Eastern Conference? BJ, who you got?
I got the Magic. I got the Magic in this game. I don't know what's going on down there in Cleveland. Something doesn't look right to me where, you know, they've had a 3-game stretch. Now, I know they won their last game, what is about 1 point. It's a very close game. So I'm going to go with the Magic back at home. And then, you know, we'll see based on how they win. Now, if they win big, like they won the Game 3 and Game 4 in Orlando, and it's really tough to win Game 7. Especially when you're in a visiting team's court, I think they have a chance though. I think that last game gave them the confidence that needs that they will believe that they can win. Now, it's one thing that I saw with, and the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, I was at Game 1 for the Clippers, and to watch Game 5, and it'd be interesting to see what Scott said. You know, what his take is when I say this: when a team starts playing to win, that's a whole lot different than just showing up and playing the game.
Oh, man.
The Dallas Mavericks in Game 5, they played to win. Now we got a problem. And so I think the Orlando Magic right now believe that they can win. Even though they lost a game with Game 5.
Question. I think they lost on the final possession.
Yeah, I think now they're like, if we can get back here, we can win this game. So I'm going to pick the Orlando Magic in Game 6 and
Game 7.
Game 7, we'll see. But I got to see it first.
Play the song. Yeah, Scott, who you got?
No, I'm riding with BJ. This next game that Orlando, I think, is going to win this at home. I feel strongly that they're going to win this at home, because Games 3 and 4 at home gave them the confidence that they could beat this team. There was this a lot, because Games 1 and 2 on the road, I never forget Paolo Banchero said before the game, this is new for us. We're a young team, new for me. He admitted he was a little nervous. And he had 15 turnovers in those first two games in Cleveland. Got back home, went on the attack, settled in, and they figured out, oh, okay, yeah, this is playoff basketball and intensity, but we can play this game and we can beat this team. I think this team is deeper. The Magic team is deeper. And I believe top to bottom, they can play more physical. And that's been the problem for the Cavaliers. That was a team that we knocked out last year in New York in large part to physicality, especially in the front court, where Mitchell Robinson was so dominant last year. I believe that this Magic team feels like they should have won Game 5 here in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to go back home really ready to play. And Cleveland didn't even show up to meet in Orlando. It'll be interesting just to watch how they play too, because before I pick who would win game seven, I got to see how Cleveland's going to compete on the road. Right. If they go down there and get blown out again, that's problematic for them.
And I think all the pressure is on Donovan Mitchell as well, because he wants to be a superstar in this league, and you're playing against an Orlando Magic team that before the season, no one expected them to be here. No one expects them to be the fifth seed. So all the pressure in the world is on him if he can close out this series or not, especially, you know, he wants to be the franchise player, whether it be in Cleveland or elsewhere. Mm-hmm. That's a tough task now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an extremely tough task. So he's got a lot to prove, and I know he's thinking about that, or he thought about that on that flight down there and as they're getting ready to play tonight. So,
well, the big one, the Clippers, the Mavs. At the start of all of this, I think I said Mavs in seven. But looking at the last game, I'm thinking Mavs in six, because the Clippers, to me, if Paul George and James Harden show up like they did in game five, it's going to be horrible. Because we know what Luka does in closeout games. You can go and ask Devin Booker. Who you guys got, BJ? Who you rocking with for this one in Dallas?
I'm going with Dallas. Dallas is playing to win. I have nothing to say about Dallas other than let's start the game. The Clippers are going to have to bring a different level of the way they think about the game. They can't just play well. They're going to have to play as a unit. They're going to have to play defense. They're going to have to play, to me, a mistake-free game where James Harden is going to have one of those games that we saw. Was that game four that he played exceptionally well?
But the floater down the stretch. But that was a horrible defensive plan from Jason Kidd, where they were basically feeding him into the lane to try and get him to the rim protector.
Jason Kidd's not playing anymore. Jason Kidd's not playing. He's coaching. So I'm sure he had a game plan and it wasn't executed. Right now, he has this team playing exceptionally well, and they're playing together. Those young guys at the center position, Mo, I mean, do we dare say that's a nice two-headed monster right now?
Yeah, if you think of all the teams in the league, who has the better backup, like as a combination of their starting big and their backup big? Because this is what we just talked about with the Sixers. Who's backing up Embiid? With the Nuggets, who's backing up Jokic in those minutes he's not there?
The Knicks have an excellent 1-2 punch. You know, Mitchell Robinson was the starter.
And the Celtics.
And then Hartenstein, you know, and then obviously the Celtics with Porzingis and
I think the Magic have a good, you know, Wendell Carter and Jonathan Isaac. They give you solid production. I think the Mavs are a bit better than that.
They're not your traditional centers, those guys, a little more undersized, but to your point, though, the Magic do have good depth, though, up front.
But Scott, what are your keys in this Clippers-Dallas game?
No, the Dallas Mavericks know they have to win this game six. You don't want to take a chance having to fly back to L.A. to play a game seven. Not that they're not capable of going there and winning, but they know they have to close this series out. Can't give this team any more life. Luka, Kyrie, you know, they both been in this position. Kyrie has been in this position even more on his way to a championship when he was in Cleveland. So I expect him to come out and play real well. I tell you what has quietly impressed me with the Mavs late in the season and in this first playoff series, they've gotten a little better defensively. BJ mentioned the two-headed monster at the center position. Well, one of them was Daniel Gafford, who came over at the trade deadline. PJ Washington, haven't talked about him. Been very good defensively.
An unsung hero, Derrick Jones Jr.
Yes. And dare I say.
Say it, Scotty.
Couple games in this series now. Luka Doncic discovering that end of the floor. Mm-hmm. And if he will defend remotely like he's done a couple of these games in this series, now you're talking about a whole another level player, and the Mavericks really having a chance to go deep in the playoffs. Because when your best player commits defensively, he doesn't have to be the best defensive stopper on the floor, but just good enough to contribute to the effort of the team, keep the integrity of the team defense sound, which he's been doing for a lot of this series. Credit to him. I expect him to defend a little bit better again in game six, and that's why they're going to close it out. Not because of Luka just scoring 35 points and getting 15 assists, but because he's going to give us some defense.
That's a hot take.
Exactly.
But I want to give a shout out because, you know, he's taking a lot of pressure for not what he's done on the court. Because when he plays, he's unbelievable. We're talking about Kyrie Irving. But he's taking a lot of criticism off the court. Okay.
Yes.
Kyrie has been the best player in this series.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's been on both teams.
Even when his shot's not falling, he's still been the most impactful.
And Scott, you know, mentioned it. You know, Kyrie's been in big moments. And there's one thing I can still remember Scott and I talking about Kyrie at McDonald's, at the McDonald's game.
Yes, he said, at McDonald's.
No, he was at the McDonald's All-American game in high school.
Yes.
And I remember, you know, Scott casually said to me, he said, BJ, Kyrie's that type of guard that you like. I remember him saying that to me. I said, really? I said, he's small. He said, no, he's that type of guard that you like. And Kyrie Irving has been terrific in this series. Kyrie he's playing at a level on the defensive end I haven't seen him do in quite some time.
He's defending as well, too. Yes.
No and question. His leadership has been on point with this team.
No question.
So I want to give Kyrie credit because when he plays, I mean, he's a terrific talent. And Scott, once again, when it comes to evaluating players, he was dead on. He said, he's the type of guard that you like. And Kyrie, and I remember that. And Scott can verify. He's right here. I remember he called me from the event and told me that. He said,
yes. I don't know if you remember, I added, he was the best guard that I had seen since a guard who wore number 11 for our Detroit Pistons in terms of handling that basketball.
Well, I didn't want to let too much out.
That was one Isaiah Thomas. So yes. He was a special young talent. You could see it. He just had such a command on the floor with the way he could handle the ball. And you know what we haven't talked about too? What's incredible? He's not the most athletic guy. He's quick. And he's got great dexterity. But in terms of that high riser, that's not necessarily him. But the way he can finish in the lane over 7 footers, contort his body.
His hang time finish, in the air.
His hang time, right, left hand. It's as good as I've seen for a guard that's 6'2 and under.
I agree. So I just want to give him credit where credit is due. Look, Luka is Luka.
Yes.
But the best player in this series has been Kyrie Irving.
Good call.
He's been the best. Mm-hmm. I expect him to win, and I think we'd all agree. And this, and if they do advance tomorrow, that next round is going to be a monster. We might need to get a play by play for one of them games because that's going to be a monster.
They're going to see the Ant-Man, right?
No, they're going to see Shea. Let's end with this. Jalen Brunson scored at least 37 points in 4 consecutive playoff games. Mm-hmm. The first player to do that since Michael Jordan in 1993. So I got to get your predictions for this series.
I was there for that. I saw that. I didn't remember that.
At least 37 in 4 straight games. Yes, BJ, you were there. You were witnessing it live in the flesh, and no doubt you assisted some of those 37 plus points.
Well, I want to know why he didn't pass the ball. I'm sure he was getting double teamed. What's going on?
Well, no doubt you would have been better than Tobias Harris, right? But I got to get your predictions for the Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks series. Scott, let's start with you.
I'm a favorite of the Knicks. I'm picking the Knicks in this series. They're better defensively. They're physically tougher. Indiana's a younger team. They're really reliant on playing at a real fast pace. getting easy baskets in transition. I think the Knicks will limit those opportunities. More of the games will be played to the pace of the Knicks' liking than the Pacers, in my opinion. So I'm going to pick the Knicks. I think the Pacers will get a game or two, but I think the Knicks win this series in six.
BJ?
I just think there's too many things when you come to playoff basketball that you look at in the series. And it's one, you look at the talent. You know, both teams are incredibly talented. But there's one variable. It's the toughness. Mm-hmm. I think the Knicks are the tougher team.
Yep.
I think that's going to be hard to overcome. I think they're going to set the tempo. You know, Brunson, I mean, look, I just don't see any answers for Brunson when it comes what the Pacers are going to do. And if the Pacers play at the pace they were playing in the previous series, I think this could easily go 4-0.
What concerns me this, I want to get your thoughts on this. The Pacers, they play an extremely fast pace. We saw them win this series against the Bucks by picking up their guys full court, Damian Lillard especially, taking him out of game by, not taking him out of game, but slowing him down and making him more tired. You saw the effect it had on him in the fourth quarter. And the Indiana Pacers are not afraid to go deep into their bench and have guys out there. Whereas the Knicks are the opposite. Tom Thibodeau will go with his starters for as many minutes as humanly possible. My concern is, if I'm the Knicks, is that's a lot of pressure to maintain over a seven-game series on legs that are already tired from six games with half your team playing 45-plus minutes a night, basically. How do you see that going for nothing? Do you not see that the Pacers could find a way? I'm not saying they'll win the series because I'm picking the Knicks to win it, but they could find a way to wear down Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks just by throwing bodies at him and wearing him out by giving him all that pressure, extending it 94 feet.
That's a strategy, to pick him up and utilize more bodies and have a guard in front of him, you know, 70 feet away from the basket and forcing the ball out of his hands, trying to trap him and make others beat you. But when these teams have played before, and the Knicks will find a way still, with that being said, to slow it down. Even if Brunson has to give it up initially, he'll find a way to get it back. And then they'll play half-court basketball the way they've been playing all season long with him. He's going to score. And the guys like Josh Hart and Miles McBride, DiVincenzo, OG Anunoby, Isaiah Hartenstein, all these guys gain a lot of confidence now winning that first round playoff series too. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Sixers and Knicks series was a pick 'em early on, you know, by Vegas, by the odds. So there was some pressure now. There's going to be more pressure, though, on the Knicks now. They're going to be heavily favored to win the series. I don't think there's going to be many people picking the Pacers to win. To BJ's point, and I talked about physicality. He used the word toughness, and that's what's carried the Knicks all year. That's going to carry them again this season. I mean, this series against this team, and barring any kind of injury, I just don't see the Pacers.
Yeah, Knicks Celtics conference finals going to go crazy. But the Pacers won the regular season matchup 2-1. Having said that, the most recent matchup on February the 10th, where the Pacers beat the Knicks, Taj Gibson was in the starting lineup for New York at the time. So safe to say it's going to be very different this time around. But BJ and I and Scott will be with you every step of the way, as we'll be here daily shows every day of the NBA playoffs. So make sure you subscribe to the show on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast from. We appreciate all of you who tune in. Scott, we appreciate you stopping by. Don't be a stranger. Stop by again soon. And the people have been asking me when they're going to get another watch along. So I think that we got to run that back as well, because the people out there really enjoyed that. So you guys let me know when you're ready, because I'm going to be here.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds like a winner.
Yes, appreciate sir. You, Coach, for stopping by. Appreciate you.
Hey, appreciate you guys for having me. I miss being here.
Hey, man. Anytime. We here every day. I'm here at 5, 6 a.m. every day.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what time it is for you, Scott, in your part of the world, but we here every day. Anytime you want to show up, you've got an open invitation to the show. And in the meantime, enjoy the orange and blue skies, or as they say.
Exactly.
Until next time, get buckets.